Hello, friends, and welcome to this week's Recovery Radio Replay. This is Radio Johnny from the Latah Recovery Center. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook and Twitter. Recovery Radio's mission is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affects us all, to make our community aware of the recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in recovery, highlighting their experience, strength, and hope for continuing recovery. Play. You are listening to Recovery Radio. I am Johnny, and I am a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And my co-host is...
And I am Denise, and I am in recovery from addiction, and very grateful to be here today.
Fabulous. And today, not in the studio, but via Zoom, is Dan. Dan R. from Sacramento, California. And just to give you a little heads up, I've known Dan since I think I was about 16 or 17 years old. We ran together quite a bit through the years, and we've been friends for a long darn time. I think we figured out it was like 45 years or something like that. Something like that.
Is it okay for me to say something? Say, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Definitely been a while.
Absolutely, you can tell the truth. Well, Dan, why don't you kind of introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your historical background and so folks can get to know you.
Oh, sure. My pleasure. First of all, good morning, Denise. Good morning, good morning, Dan. Johnny.
Yo.
Yeah.
Thanks for being here with us or there with us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Yeah, I feel like we're all in the same room. Yeah, 6 feet apart.
Right.
Exactly. And we're not exactly social distance here, but we're okay.
You know, got to share a computer with a microphone, and I'm not too scared of your cooties.
Yeah, so no, I'm.
You've been washing your hands and taking good care of yourself. Yeah,
I wash my hands so much now that and use so much hand sanitizer that when I go to the bathroom, it cleans the toilet.
Yeah, me too.
Enough about me.
Oh yeah. Well, as you pointed out, Johnny, we ran together for many years. And to your audience, good morning. My name is Dan, and I am a recovering codependent, and that embraces a whole lot of stuff. And maybe I can talk about that after a little bit, but just in way of history. Johnny, one of your hosts, I'm a California kid, born and raised in the Bay Area, and a family of seven kids. And when I was a second oldest, when I was real little, I was privileged to be raised in a family of, you know, middle class. I guess today we would probably call that upper middle class. But soon into my childhood, my parents were divorced. It was very traumatic, actually. My father abandoned my mother and the seven kids. That was really hard to go from, you know, at least being a old, you know, having everything I needed, you know, food and clothing and school and friends and toys, to being the poor kid. Who, you know, had holes in his shoes and still trying to keep up that facade of everything is okay. And when you're a child, you don't know how to process that. So come to find out later, my counselor called it impaired coping. But what it was just a kid trying to figure out how to survive in life while all this crazy stuff is going on around you. And just a shout out to my mom. She may be listening to this. Hi, Mom. Thank you for hanging in there with all seven kids for all of those years and raising us so well, working multiple jobs and sacrificing and never talking bad about our father, and raising us with good morals and good values. So Johnny will attest to that. I have a real cool mom, don't I, Johnny boy?
Oh, absolutely. She was the best. Even though we were out of control losers at the time, she never treated us as such, although I'm pretty sure she had a clue what was going on.
Oh, yes, she did have a clue, but she even to this day, always thinks the best. And all my friends that would come around the house to most of the time we were up to no good, she befriended them all and probably helped a few of us along the way besides just this. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She really helped, helped us out a lot. Somehow by the grace of God, I, made it to my 20s. Like Johnny said, we, met up in our teens and proceeded to get into more and more progressive trouble as the years went by. And come to find out now, you know, I was covering up for a lot of the pain and, you know, a little bit, the audience and Denise knows a little bit about Johnny's background. And he had a similar background. His parents were both at home, but, you know, estranged from each other, more or less emotionally, psychologically, and, you know, both drinking and carrying on like that. And that's what my dad had been doing, alcoholic his whole life. And so when you're raised in an environment like that, sometimes the pain and the confusion and the loneliness build up and we find our answer, our escape in drugs and alcohol and other addictions. And that's where I found myself and found a nice, wonderful gal. As pretty common, also suffering from some of the same symptoms that I was. I guess similar psyches attract. And we were married at the age of 25 in the Oakland Hills in the Bay Area underneath some redwood trees with a whole bunch of hippie freaks running around and dogs and people in suits and cowboy outfits and cutoffs. And it was a very eclectic wedding. We used to have concerts back in those days called A Day on the Green. And our friends called our wedding Day in the Dirt. And it was a good time was had by all. I think we were all lost and aimless, probably doing lots of alcohol and drugs right there at the wedding. And those were the days back in the 70s where nobody asked a lot of questions about stuff like that. I really don't think that we had a clue. Judy and I, my wife and I, and we're celebrating 41 years of marriage this year.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you. We've stuck with each other through all this. We took our vows seriously, through better or worse, and she put up with a lot of worse, you know, when it came to me. Yeah, we had two kids right out of the chute. You know, our first two anniversaries were pregnant, and when you're a couple addicts, codependents, trying to make a marriage work, and you throw a couple little babies, screaming babies in with that, and you're both broke, young hippie couple being broke, and you know, you're mixing drugs and alcohol and addictions in with all of that, it was a miracle that we did not divorce. We came really close, though. When the girls, when I think my youngest daughter was only about 8 or 9 months, and my oldest was about a year and a half or almost two, we were seeking a divorce. So it didn't take long. And again, by God's grace, we were offered a place up in the country on 5 acres with a mobile home there where we could go sort of decongest and get out of the Bay Area. So we did that, and by miracle after miracle after miracle, I found a job, my boss was very loving and kind and open and supportive. And he told me about God. And Judy also got a job, a part-time job. And her boss, I think her boss knew my boss in two separate hospitals, two separate institutions. Her boss also was a servant of follower of Jesus Christ. And so he was talking to my wife one day saying, boy, you're saying that your husband has really changed a lot. Dan has changed a lot. And she couldn't figure it out. And she said something about, you know, I think he's got God now or something. And so he told her about God, his higher power, Jesus Christ. And she and I began a journey of both trying, attempting, seeking to follow God in our lives. And that was our departure away from drugs and alcohol. That was 1984. So that was a big turning point in our lives. Boy, what a joyous time that was to walk away from, I think, Johnny, it was about 12 years nonstop of being high every day. Does that sound about right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely.
And if Johnny or Denise, you have any question about anything, just stop me because I can really give testimony to some of the wonderful things that have happened in my life and how I came to a 12-step program.
You're doing great.
Oh, great. Okay. I'll just keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keep rolling. We're not, if you hear snoring, then.
Oh, I'm shut up. But, I'm intently listening.
Listening. I've lived this story, so I'm a little more.
Yeah, that's right. I have not. Don't interrupt.
Just kidding.
I know that a lot of people that are listening can identify with a number, maybe not 100% of everything that I'm saying in my story, but what I found out by entering the rooms was that as we all shared and we told parts of our story, that each one of us could identify with a significant amount of each other's story about our struggles, whether it be our childhoods or our addictions or our compulsions or the hangups and struggles we're going through now in our lives. And so I found out that when I sat and listened to other people, maybe I would do my 3-minute talking and share my story, but do a lot of listening. That over time, that meeting after meeting after meeting, and working with a mentor, I call him my sponsor, of which I have two, talking with them, going to meetings and reading literature, that I found, wow, I really could identify with what all these other people were saying. And so in my own struggles, I had these lies I was living by because of the fact that I came from this, you know, upper middle class family that now had deteriorated to putting on a facade that we were healthy and happy and wealthy, but we weren't, you know, single mom, working jobs, just going and getting free shoes down at the Daughtry's or day-old donuts at Winchell's or leftover fried chicken from Kentucky Fried Chicken. All that stuff, by the way, was pretty cool because you could come home after school and have an old donut and a frozen piece of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and I thought I was king. But the truth was, is we were the poor kids on the block, and God was providing. So as Judy and I got married and we were trying to make this family work, and we had both come to Christ, and we had both confessed the sins that we knew, the wrongs that we had done in our life up to that point, we still were quite clueless on how to love each other well in a healthy relationship. In other words, how do you talk when you're struggling and you can't pay your bills? It's like, financial stuff always brings about, you know,
I can relate. You know, I can relate.
An argument.
Done that. Something,
you know. Still doing that.
Yeah, or there you go. Or the kids acting up, you know, and are we both on the same page, you know? You know, honey, don't punish them this way, punish them that way, or, you know, you're too strict or you're too tough, or, you know, all these struggles of young married life. Brought my wife to the point to where she said, wow, I really had a rotten childhood. I think I need help. And I kind of looked at her like, well, go get help then. You know, what's stopping you? It sounds good. You're the source of the problem anyway. You know, if we can fix you, if we can fix you, we'll fix this marriage.
Right.
So she actually did. She went to ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and began to work the 12 steps. And I thought, well, if that's helping her, that's cool. And I remember going to one of my pastors as a young churchgoer and saying, now, Pastor, I understand I'm a believer, a follower of God now. Like, can people that follow God, can they still, like, fight with their wife and stuff? And I was expecting, I think, some big theological treatise like no or something like that. And he goes, oh, yeah, sure, you bet. That's because, you know, you haven't surrendered your whole life to God and he's working on you. And, you know, you're going to go through many years of this before you, you know, start to mature and pop out the other end. And I was kind of disappointed, but it kind of reassured me anyway that I wasn't the only Christian in church that was fighting with his wife at home. So that was a good to hear that, but there really wasn't like a group at the church that said, oh, all you guys that are fighting with your wives at home, show up on Monday nights and we're going to have a talk it out session. That wasn't offered to me.
It wasn't the support of that.
And I'm not, you know, ridiculing the pastor or the church or anything. It just wasn't part of what kind of support they offered in our community. And I remember doing the dishes one day and Judy was doing her 12-step work at the table, having a cup of coffee. And she was telling me about, you know, her rough childhood. And I says, oh boy, I'm thankful I didn't have a messed up childhood like that. I was just still in this denial. Mm-hmm. And she looked up to me and she says, well, you know, you're pretty doggone self-centered and selfish and lazy, and you could really benefit from a program yourself. And I kind of looked out the window there with soap on my hands and said, it must have been God whispering in my heart saying, you know, she's right. And I almost broke down and just started crying. And so if I'm getting a little choked up, that's because I'm reliving it. Mm-hmm. It was a time, I think, when God was saying, you know, you had a lot of pain as a kid and it's been with you for, you know, like 15 years now, 20 years now. And it's time for you to get busy and seek some help and do some work and start to live a different life and start at least telling the truth to yourself. And so, I took her up on that, and I went and looked into a group or some literature or something, and it flopped. I didn't pursue it. I didn't follow with action. I had a conviction, and I had an idea that this was a good idea, but I didn't follow through. So fast forward another 10 years, and another crisis hit. And this time I said to myself, I'm going to go get some counseling. And, so I went and talked to a counselor and she asked me a little bit about my childhood and my dad and about alcoholism and neglect and some other issues. And I remember just really letting it all out and was broken. I cried and I was having some psychosomatic illness, stomach aches and everything like that. And she gave me a book about this kind of these tools that we use when we're young kids to survive and how they work at the time, And they keep us alive and they keep us, you know, going. But when we get to adult years, they don't serve us well at all. And she called it impaired coping. The author of the book called it codependency. But suffice it to say, it was a life of denial and a life of where I found my value, guys. I found my value in what other people thought of me. That's where I got my value.
And you know what, Dan?
Go ahead.
This is, I think this is starting off on that topic of value and going forward from there. Take a quick break and listen to a little bit of music.
Awesome.
Get a drink of water and we'll roll back in just a couple of minutes.
Enjoy the music, guys.
Yeah, so you're listening to KRFP in beautiful Moscow, Idaho, the coolest station in the nation.
Trucking, got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking like the dude of man. Together, more or less in line. Just keep trucking on, on, on.
Arrows of neon and flashing marquees out on Main Street. Chicago, New York, Detroit, and it's all on the same street. A typical city involved in a typical daydream. Hang it up and see what tomorrow brings.
Dallas got a soft machine. Houston, too close to New Orleans. New York got the ways and means and just won't let you be.
Most of the cats that you meet on the streets speak of true love. Most of the time they're sitting and crying at home. One of these days, they know they gotta get going. Out of the door and down to the street all alone.
Chugging like the doodah man once told me you got to pay your hand. Sometimes the cards ain't worth a dime if you don't lay them down.
You know she isn't the same. Living on Reds, vitamin C, and cocaine. All a friend can say is ain't it a shame.
Trucking up the Buffalo, been thinking you got to mellow slow. It takes time to pick a place to go. And just keep trucking on, on, on.
Staring out of the hotel window. Got a tip, they're gonna kick the door in again. I'd like to get some sleep before I travel. But if you got a warrant, I guess you're gonna come in.
Busted down on Bourbon Street. Sit up like a bowling pin. Knocked down, it gets to wearing thin. It just won't let you be.
Like hanging around and you like a travel. Get tired of traveling, you want to settle down. I guess I can't revoke yourself of trying. Get out of the door, light out and look all around.
Sometimes the light's all shining on me.
Hey, Denise. So, hey, Johnny.
You were talking about values, where you found your value, rather, not values, but where you found your value in the world.
Oh, yeah, right.
And that was what other people thought about you, or what they were saying about you.
Or what you thought about you.
Right.
Yeah, that was it.
Sometimes that's the case. You know, we don't always know.
I found myself being a full-time manager of what other people's perceptions of me were. That was a lot of work. And then I tried to control that, control situations, control my coworkers, and control the people on my block, my friends, and control my wife, and control my kids. I mean, oh my goodness, I was like God working overtime. It's a miracle I even had any time to sleep. I was in control of so many things. And then the funny thing was is that, oh my goodness, I was in control of nothing. I was a slave to that miserable life. Boy, perfectionism, workaholism. Yeah, always being right, always having to have the answer, always having to give advice. Oh, my advice was the best.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It was terrible advice. But I thought that I could save the world. Boy, was God lucky to have me in the world.
And of course, you know, I remember those times and I would never do any of the things that those people were doing, you know.
I was so
above all of that and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
I was the smartest 15-year-old in the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so welcome to Super Dan.
Oh, it was so terrible. I got to the point to where one night I was sitting out on the standing out in the front yard watering the lawn. It was about 11 o'clock at night here in Sacramento. That means it was down to 100 or down to 90, and just talking with God in my heart, going, wow, I wonder how my wife and kids and grandkids would do without me in their lives. I wonder if I'm really a necessary, important part of this thing we call life. And if I checked out, would that be better for me and everybody else? And I know it's it's garbage and it's, you know, that's a harmful way to think, but that's what I was thinking. And I was thinking, I think now I got that little voice again. Go get some help. Go reach out.
Sorry, Johnny and he didn't turn his phone ringer down. Are you still there, Dan?
Well, he's actually calling me.
Oh.
Oh, no, that's a mistake. I just slapped the phone. Okay, I'm going to try and end this somehow.
See, it's a good thing we're not doing this live. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, now I'm FaceTiming you.
I think you just ended the meeting on the thing.
Oh, God. Hang on.
Well, it's a good thing, guys, that this isn't the first time that we've told or heard this
This is why you were the chosen one.
Okay. I am ending this now.
Are you going to send him another thing?
He should be able to rejoin.
Okay.
Oh, come on. Rejoin. Well,
you know, we don't always know those things. You may know those things because you're running it, but we don't always know.
Well, it was actually my sister trying to FaceTime me.
Oh, geez.
And when I slapped the phone to shut it up. Okay. There we go.
He knew. Okay, good. Good job, Dan. Are you there, Dan? Let's see if he hear him.
Now he's there.
Hello.
Are you back? Hello.
All right. Sorry about that.
Something weird's going on. Talk again for a second.
Sure. What was the last thing we were talking about? I remember I was watering.
Start out with one night I was out watering my lawn.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Just go ahead and start there in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And I remember one night I was out watering the lawn. It was a hot night, which in Sacramento means it finally got down to about 100 or 90. And I remember as I was sitting there thinking to myself and talking to God, saying, you know, I wonder if me leaving this life would be helpful. I wonder if I have really any significance or importance really in this life, or if how would my wife and my grandkids do if I wasn't here, and sort of entertaining those ideas of ending my life and moving on to the next plane of existence. And I remember at that point, not an audible voice, but a sense in my mind say, Dan, it's time to go get some help. And I just kind of put the hose away, went in the house and went to bed and woke up the next day thinking, you know, I'm going to make a phone call. Even though I don't want to reach out and I don't want to get this help, I know I need to. I need to, for the sake of not only myself and all my, you know, family and friends, I just need to get some help because, you know, I'm just not thinking the right way. I remember calling an ex-pastor friend of mine at the church and says, you got time to go have a cup of coffee and some donuts and talk. And I explained to him what I was thinking and all these crazy thoughts and stuff. And he says, yeah, I think you need some help, man. And I went to, I called my job and went to a benefit that we have, which is to visit a counselor. And this time I told the counselor, I says, you know, I'm really seriously in a bad way. And I really need some help. What do you think? And reminds me of a joke. I know Denise, I'll put a little break in all this seriousness. I know Denise appreciates a good joke. And Johnny, maybe he'll figure this out. He can be a little slow sometimes. But how many counselors does it take to change a light bulb?
I don't know, Dan. How many counselors does it take to change a light bulb?
Just one, but the light bulb's got to want to change.
Oh, I like it. See, that was good. I haven't heard that one yet. Very good, very good. Nice.
I think I told you that one.
Yeah, maybe.
That's awesome.
Well, that was me. That was me at the counselor. And you know, she sent me to my doctor who gave me some time off. And by all the workings of God through this, it was just so strange. I'll make the story really short, but I ended up with my entire family on a beach in Hawaii within about a week and a half of getting this disability. And I had the time of my life. I mean, I had like two little twins that were 8 months old and I was swimming with them in the waves. It was so fun. And then I came home and everybody else had different reasons for wanting to come home. home, and I thought, no, I just want to stay here.
Right.
I think I see hope. You know, there's hope in my future. Mm-hmm. And so when we came home, no lie, didn't use this, but no lie, within 24 hours, I had packed my bags with a pair of shorts and flip-flops, jumped in my wife's car, which is way better than my car, and drove all the way from Sacramento through the snow in my flip-flops to Moscow, Idaho.
Wow.
And I ended up in Johnny's living room, which may be where you're sitting right now.
Yep. Dining room table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and telling John and his wife that I was on some medical leave for getting better, for getting some hope in my life. And one night, Johnny said, "Well, it's 7 o'clock. I'm going to a meeting." And I said, he says, "You want to go, Dan?" And I said, "Well, sure." And then I remember his wife saying, "Oh, you don't have to go, you know, to the meeting if you don't want. You can stay here, you know, and we'll talk and watch TV and whatever." And I said, "No." I said, "No, I think I'll go with Johnny to that meeting." And I went to an AA meeting, and it was so amazing. Everybody at the table was there in support and care and fellowship and honesty. And the openness was, the transparency was just amazing. We read, I think it was one of the steps out of the book, and I felt like I had died and gone to heaven without dying and going to heaven. And I remember leaving that meeting thinking, this is the kind of honesty, this is the kind of openness, this is the kind of truth I think that God is bringing me to get health back in my life. And I took a copy that Johnny had given to me of the big book. It was actually a little book. It was a little copy of the big book. And I went home and read the first 10 chapters all about Bill W. and Dr. Bob and what they went through and the origins. And I thought I was reading a mirror about myself. And it was like eating a piece of, you know, roast beef after I had fasted for a week. I mean, it was like I was feeding on life-giving truth as I read those words from the big book. And I had hope, and I saw others that had life was
whoa, hang on a second, Bob. for some reason you're coming through really weird for a second there.
Sure. Start me over.
Back up to eating roast beef after fasting. In three, two, one.
Yeah, reading the big book, those early chapters about the beginnings of AA and the struggle of Bill W. It was just like a breath of fresh air. It was like a cool drink of water in the middle of a desert. And I was just drinking it down and enjoying it. Every night before I go to bed, I would read a chapter or half a chapter and just soak it in and just say, "Hallelujah, this is food for my soul." And I said to myself, you know, I'm going to find myself a group. This is going to be a group like the one Johnny took me up at Moscow. I'm going to find myself a group, and I am going to get healthy, and I'm going to get happy, and I'm going to love myself and love others. And I got on the internet. I found a meeting, and that was 4.5 years ago. And I am so grateful for those rooms and those meetings and this program and my higher power, which I call God, I am so grateful. And all those people and all that support, my sponsors, and all that care. And if anybody's listening, you can find it too. All you have to do is want it.
I have to back up again.
It's okay.
I don't know what's going on. It's just every once in a while, it sounds like springs are breaking on your end. I don't know if you're moving or what.
No, I'm just sitting here looking out the window at a really blue sky.
Yeah, California. Okay. I just want to go somewhere warm like that right now.
Well,
my kids too.
I bet.
Let's back up to if just after, you know, I found this great thing, and if somebody else wants it, you know.
Sure.
Right, other people could find it too.
Right. Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
And so if somebody's listening, I just want to encourage you. I found a wonderful program that was there for me when I needed it. And that program, whether it be AA or NA or Celebrate Recovery or Codependence Anonymous, or if you have somebody in your life that's addicted or abusive, working on any of those 12-step groups would be a great place to start to find the help and the hope, because you can make it. You will make it. But you need help outside yourself. I did not want anything outside of what I thought was what my idea.
It's screwing up again, Dan.
Well, I bet you we've got most of my story.
Yep.
I mean, I could go a little further, obviously, but I probably have talked for an hour already.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
really
I just.
If you want to whittle that down to 30 or 40 minutes, could I talk for another 10 or 15? Yes, I could.
Yeah.
But,
that'd be cool, except for some reason, it just the sound coming through on your end just keeps getting weird.
We'll just blame it on Bonnie's spectrum.
Right.
How about that?
Yeah.
I'm cool with what we've already done, and I never even talked about my program. But you know, in God has a plan. It's not my plan. It's His plan. He knows what He wants to accomplish.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. Right. Well, I think you did great.
We'll do the little finish up here, and thank you in 3, 2, 1. Well, Dan, hey, I can't thank you enough for talking with us today and telling us your story. Like I said, I think Denise was fascinated because I've never heard her be this quiet through the entire show. I mean, she's usually quite a bit more animated and more questions, but solidly, solidly engrossed in your story. And I think that, I mean, it speaks volumes to the value she's getting out of it, and hopefully our listeners too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've just been absolutely quiet, intently listening, and your story and what you've shared has been so encouraging, and just brings a lot of hope, and again, encouragement to the whole thing. I can relate to what you're talking about. And it was really great to learn some more things for me, you know? So thank you for sharing your story and being able to be vulnerable and truthful and just, and share all that. I really appreciate that. Thank you for, for sharing your part of your life with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I just end with saying that let go and let God, and one day at a time, one step at a time, we're going to make it.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go.
Bye, guys.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for today, Denise. Again, thanks to Dan, our guest, and thank you, Denise, for coming over here and risking your social distance to get some new content out on the air. And I'll close with my usual. If you think you have a problem with drugs and alcohol, you do.